It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Modern technology has made it more possible than ever for us to listen to whatever music we want to listen to, wherever and whenever we want to listen. For many of us, that means we never have to listen to anything new. This hour, we're going to talk about when our musical tastes are formed and why so many of us have such a strong connection to the music of our youth. We'll also test a couple of different theories. Some people believe that we stop seeking out new music on average at age 33. Other people believe that our strongest cultural preferences are formed by the time we're 14 years old. We'll talk about some of those theories this hour. And with me right now are two guys who know a lot about music and musical tastes. Bob Doerr is here. He's the host of Backtracks and Blue Avenue on Iowa Public Radio and, of course, leader of the Blue Band and up very early this morning. Bob, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation. It's always fun to work with you and Mark.
And you were out performing last night, so this is very early for you. Mark Simmet is also here. He's senior music producer at Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Charity. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Mark, I want to start with you because you are, obviously, you're a music lover, but you're in a career where you are paid to seek out new music and explore new music. Have you found that your personal preferences have shifted over time? Is it a little harder to look for that new stuff?
If by personal preferences you mean like genre and, you know, that kind of thing, it's really hard to answer that question because, as you said, that's what I do every day. One gets a little jaded, but there's still music, still certain songs still jump out at you. And but, you know, I wouldn't narrow it down to a specific I like that kind of music.
Do you, in your free time, do you spend a lot of time listening to songs from your past?
I do that from time to time because I feel like, well, I should be off the clock once in a while and get back to the old stuff. So, yes, I do that.
So, Bob, you, of course, you're the host of Backtracks, and, of course, you spend a lot of time playing the music of the youth of many people, including your own youth.
It's odd that the definition of Backtracks is the song has to be 25 years old. So, but now we've moved into the 90s on
wow.
Backtracks. So
I didn't want to hear that, Bob.
For me.
So when, I mean, obviously as a musician, you have a different relationship with music, but when you think about the stuff that you really enjoy listening to, the stuff that you really enjoy playing on the radio, can you sort of mark a time when you stopped being interested in what was new and maybe popular?
Well, because I was a real IPR staff member up until 6 years ago, and part of my job, too, was to present new music. I did not stop at age 33, but I probably would have had I not been forced to be aware and present new music to people. And it's my theory that people don't know what they like, but they like what they know. And, it may be a cliche phrase now, but I believe that very, very much. And that's why highly rated radio stations play the core 30 songs, because people are looking for what they know. It's like a comfort food, I think.
The familiarity, the opportunity to sing along.
Correct.
That makes it a little more fun. So what makes you...
I mean, the classic example would be Mustang Sally. People love the song. And they like to sing along, despite the fact that they've heard it 100,000 times.
What makes you think that you probably would have stopped seeking out new music at age 33?
Mostly because the core of what was and still is being released, it does not have that 50s, 60s, R&B, saxophone-dominated groove. To me, it's all about the groove.
All right. And so when you hear something that is new that harkens back to that, does that speak to you in a different way?
Does it connect with me? Yes. Is it something that I will seek out beyond what I heard on the radio? Probably not.
Interesting. So I've found that when I hear a song that's new to me that I like, now I'm very likely to download that song and listen to that song and get familiar with that song.
But is that because of your career and what you're doing and what you present every day is something new and fresh, or is that just your internal thing?
I think that's my internal thing, but I'm less likely now to dig into an artist's canon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll hear a song I like and I think I want to hear that again, but I don't think I want to listen to this whole album and really get to know this artist and get to know all of this music. And I think that that's been a shift in my own listening. I mean, Mark, you're nodding your head.
I'm nodding my head because, oh, okay. Because I'm thinking just the opposite, actually. If I like an artist, I do like to dig into their canon. I mean, it's got to have to like them enough to make that effort. And to I wouldn't do that with everybody, but I find that to be very rewarding. But you know, you are obviously of the times where it's all about the song. You know, I like that song and I'm going to listen to that song, and you know that it's not the album anymore, which is a major change, I think.
Well, and I was thinking about that just this morning, because of course there was a time when it was all about the song before, when you'd buy the 45, you'd buy the single, and then we did shift to you would buy albums. Buying singles was pretty rare. They put them out there. I remember seeing cassette singles, but I always thought, why would I waste my money on that? And then now it is. It's all about the single again, because you can download that track. I mean, Bob, does that almost seem like buying 45s to you?
No.
No, not at all, huh? Why not?
Where's the B-side?
You do get the B-side. You do get, and that's probably, it, back in the day, it was probably the impetus to seek out the album. Or it often became, when I was a kid, it often became, well, I could get 14 songs for $2.99, or I could get two songs for 69 cents. So, you know, you kind of go, well, I'll go for it for the big record. Or a lot of times albums, LPs were released in stereo, where the single was only in mono. So you have those other decisions beyond just the music itself.
Right. Well, and
today's, I mean, that's the way music is marketed today. It, buy my song. Here's my song on a video. And it is all about the song and video representation of one song to get you to maybe be interested. But I don't really find that in the general public. It's all about the music. Still the song.
There was more value added to buying the whole album as well. I mean, even through CDs, because you'd get whatever information was packed into that jewel case. And of course, you know, back with the vinyl, you'd get quite a lot in there, you know, lyrics at the least, and and maybe a whole lot more. And that went through cassettes, that went through CDs. And now you don't get that stuff when you download a whole album.
Maybe that's another reason why I steadfastly hold to I will not play downloads on any of the shows that I do.
It could be. Well, one of the theories that sparked our interest in this show was this idea that's been written about in the New York Times, the idea that our cultural preferences are primarily formed by the time we're 14 years old. So for a lot of us, that's ninth grade. It's a time of a lot of exploration. And I was curious because the producer of this program, Emily Woodbury, asked everybody who's on the show today to select a song that they feel kind of represents their youth, a song from their youth. And Bob, you chose Chubby Checker's The Twist.
Correct.
Which was released in 1960.
I was not even 10.
You were not even 10.
Correct.
So why did you pick that song?
Oh, it was huge on WLS radio. I grew up in the Chicagoland area, and it actually rose to number one twice with over a year gap. And it was regularly presented on Dick Clark's Bandstand. I mean, I'm 8 years old, and you get three channels on the television. And, of course, when you're growing up in popular culture, WLS, WCFL, and Dick Clark's American Bandstand, it was there all the time. And it was the definition of the dance song in the dance song era. And written by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters originally had, well, when I was 8 years old, I didn't understand the double entendre of the whole thing. But it had a groove, it had saxophone, you could dance to it, you know, all the things that Dick Clark, the Raider record kind of thing.
Right.
And it did it the following year. So I think it was kind of the definition of the song of the times that I was just becoming aware of music and girls. And then it came back around again. And the simple dance thing with saxophone and simple lyrics, I thought it was really kind of, it forced me, or this show forced me to think about
right.
that. And that's kind of weird.
So when you hear it, what does it make you feel? Where does your mind go when you hear the song?
Oh, I turn it up loud and do the twist as much as my back will allow me. And it takes me to a completely different era. But again, it's kind of interesting because the show that I am responsible for is by definition all the music has to be 25 years old. So it does take me back to this comfort spot, I think.
Right.
When I was
wild-eyed
and innocent. It was great.
To 8-year-old Bob?
Yeah. I was doing the twist with my little suitcase 4-speed record player, you know. And, it was fantastic.
All right. Well, let's do the twist here. Doing the twist with Chubby Checker this hour. We're talking about our musical tastes, when they're formed, how they evolve, what they say about us. With me, Bob Doerr and Mark Simmet of Iowa Public Radio. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how our musical tastes are formed, when they stop evolving, how they evolve, what we listen to really says about us. And you are welcome to join the conversation this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, I've got Bob Doerr, host of Backtracks on Iowa Public Radio, also Blue Avenue, and of course, he's the leader of the Blue Band. Mark Simmet is here, senior music producer at Iowa Public Radio. And we want to bring Zlatan Krijan into the conversation. He's an associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Zlatan.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be back.
Well, and just before the break, we were listening to Chubby Checker, and I asked Bob what hearing that song does in his mind. He was talking about it, you know, rocketing him back to a cozy or warm place when he was 8 years old. And that's a big part of how we listen to music, isn't it? That it really transports us.
Absolutely. And I think that effect of music just grows as we get older. Because
you think it actually gets stronger as we get older?
I do, because the music becomes more defining of an era in our life. Right. So when we were that age, this was just a part of life that it was going on. But now when we can reflect back, we kind of associate that music with a certain stage in life, with that coming of age period, with all the intense and formative experiences we had during that time.
Interesting. I mean, I certainly feel more nostalgic when I hear the music of my youth now. But I remember listening to music so intensely mm-hmm. as a teenager. And I've thought about this because I think about it with the books that I read and the movies that I watched. It feels like I was trying on other people's emotions and experiences through the media that I sought out. Do you think that there's something to that as you're a teenager and you're thinking, you know, you want to fall in love, you're exploring that part of your life, you may feel anger that is really not justified, and you're trying on the emotions of other people. Is that part of what we seek out with music?
Certainly. I mean, I think it's a combination of a couple of factors. So, you know, you do have this adolescent brain that experiences very strong feelings, that's very much attuned toward exploration and experimentation. And so, you know, music and arts and sort of other cultural elements play a big role here. So I think that intensity of the time and exploration and motivation that we have to try on these different hats that you just described is a very important part of it. And also music culture and certain genres of music become very socially defining. So if you think about, you know, I remember the punks and the goths and all these cliques, if you wish, that were largely defined by the music and a lot of division lines in my high school. This was in Europe, not in the United States, but the dynamics are about the same. A lot of these groups were defined by the kind of music you listened to, and it became kind of an identity badge at the time as well.
Well, sure, and I certainly remember there were musical groups that it didn't matter if I could like them or not. There was no way I was going to listen to New Kids on the Block, for example. That was not who I wanted to be. I mean, Mark, I see you nodding.
Yes, I think every era has those bands that are you don't want to put anybody down. New Kids on the Block can probably take it, though. They can take it.
They were hanging tough. So
wherever they are.
Right. But I mean, Mark, do you remember trying to or feeling like whatever you listened to and whatever people knew you were listening to said something about you?
To a degree, I don't remember being in large groups of people where everybody's, you know, presenting what they like, if you will.
Right.
the radio was still very big, you know, when I was 13, 14 years old. So whatever was on the radio, that's what everybody knew. I also heard WLS, I think, was that a clear channel station or something? That blasted out.
Yeah, 50,000 watts AM. So
yeah,
everyone could hear it everywhere.
In the Midwest. I was in Minnesota, and I remember listening to WLS and other hit stations out of Minneapolis and so on. But there was also nighttime stations where they would let the DJ kind of stretch out a bit and play album tracks and so on. So that influenced me as well. So my taste was not necessarily mainstream, if that answers your question.
Well, and did you judge other people by their musical taste?
Oh, sure. Of course. I'm trying to think of a good example from that time of something that people liked that, the equivalent of New Kids on the Block.
Debbie Boone.
Debbie Boone, oh my goodness. Whoa. That's way, way to the other side. There you go.
I have an actual experience with Debbie Boone, and she was nothing like her persona on a record. Let me just say that.
You're not going to tell us anymore, huh?
Well, FCC rules would not allow me.
All right. Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life, I think, was her biggest hit, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, Zlatan, how about you? I mean, do you remember that, trying to communicate to other people who you were by what you listened to?
Absolutely. Definitely a very salient time. I do come from a family of musicians, largely professional musicians. My brother has been a sort of professional keyboard player for 30 years. My dad also played with symphony orchestra and then bass guitar in rock bands in the 70s. And my uncle was actually the director of National Opera in Croatia and the conductor. So I've been exposed to a wide variety of music since very early age, but that didn't stop me during high school to fall in a predictable, what was then kind of a rock grunge pattern, which in my city was definitely sort of the go-to music for most teenagers during the early 90s. Nirvana and the like was definitely what defined that time for me, as well as for many others across the world.
Well, and for this show, as I mentioned earlier, our producer asked each of us to come up with a song that sort of sums up our teen years. What did you pick, Zlatan?
So I don't know if this song sums up my teen years. That's kind of a lofty goal for a song. But it is the first song that came to my mind, and I remember listening to it on a cassette tape, of course, laying in my bed at night. And it's in the lyrics of the song, as you will hear, where it can allow you to project a lot of stuff that happens during teenage years on it. And looking back on a song, it also has musical elements that in a strange way incorporate my musical tastes as they would develop in the future, as well as reflect that kind of a rock aspect that was very strong during that time for me.
All right, so you picked U2, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For.
That's correct.
Still haven't found what I'm looking for from 1987. Zlatan, you and I must be fairly close to the same age, I would guess.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. So the I asked during the break, I asked Bob, you were an only child, right?
Correct.
All right. And Mark, you were the oldest in your family. How about you, Zlatan? Did you have siblings?
Yeah, this one older brother who was already going out playing gigs when I was this age. And he was certainly a big influence, both in my interest in music, as well as my exposure to it.
And was he a big U2 fan?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so was my oldest brother. So, and whenever I hear U2, I think about him. But also, I mean, he shaped so much of my musical taste because I was almost 5 years younger than my oldest brother. And, of course, I was in a big hurry to grow up and to catch up. So that's one of the ways I distinguished myself, I guess, from a lot of my peers was by listening to his music when I was in high school. And I mean, Zlatan, do you feel like your brother shaped a lot of your musical interests?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly a big source of the kind of music I would listen to. He had a lot of records that I would either passively listen to or later on. I would just kind of explore myself and put different kind of records on. And that was definitely a big influence in my teenage years and certainly expanded my repertoire. And hanging out with him also kind of gave me a sense of how it is to be a musician and sort of the social aspect of music and, you know, going to concerts and playing music, which has its own draw, obviously.
Right. And you are a psychologist, but you're also a DJ and you play drums in a jazz quintet, right?
That's correct. Indigo Monks, which is a jazz group based in Ames.
All right. Terrific. And when we talk about that theory that sort of our most important cultural influences are decided by the time we're 14 years old. Does that ring true for you, Zlatan?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's that formative time where a lot of things get sort of settled and find their relatively stable place. And so I think music is one out of many things that kind of work like that.
And what about you, Bob? I mean, you took us back to when you were 8 years old, but think about when you were 14. Years old. Do you feel like that was sort of the time when a lot of those cultural interests got cemented for you?
Probably, if I had to take some kind of psychological profile, that's probably when it would happen. But I don't really remember any definitive times because I was playing in bands when I was 14 and a lot of times it was play what was popular so we could get gigs.
Sure.
And I don't really know about that because I had the opportunity to work at a public radio station that was very interested in continuing to present new music and challenged me to continue to hang in there and find new avenues that I don't really know about that because I didn't have siblings. It was me.
Right.
My parents were not necessarily musical. And so, I don't know, tough question.
If I could add to this, this issue of to what extent we get exposed to new music, to what extent we seek out the new music, there are kind of two important factors here. You know, one is opportunity and the other is motivation. So when we're young, in our adolescence, we have ample amount of both. We are very motivated to kind of figure out our culture place, to kind of stimulate ourselves with music and dancing and to have all these experiences. And we also have a lot of opportunity. We live in, we function during that time in pretty dynamic social circles. Certainly by the time we get to college, we have a large number of acquaintances and so forth. Now, as you get older and perhaps assume sort of, you know, traditional roles in life, you have a family, you have a career, both of those things change. You know, your motivation is focused on other things, developing your career, having a family, etc., and your opportunities are reduced. You tend to get reduced to a smaller number of pretty good friends. There are more barriers to basically being exposed to new music. I think all of us in this program are perhaps exceptions
right,
to that
I think
because
I have
of
a
our
room
interest.
Full of outliers.
And, right, yeah, because of our interest, because of the jobs that we do, and so forth. But those are, I think, for most people, two factors that really affect then our approach and relationship to music as we age.
We're talking about when our musical tastes are formed, how our musical tastes evolve, what they say about us this hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 866-780-9100. I'm sure there are a few other outliers out there. Are you somebody whose musical interests exploded at age 34 and you beat the odds? You know, that 33 number is really interesting to me, and it's one that has been pulled out of research with some of the technology that we have now, people listening to Pandora, people listening to Spotify and the other music sources, and they have found that, you know, people's interest in newer music, reaching out to new things, seems to slow down when they're 33 years old. Another part of that study that I thought was very interesting, it said that having a child adds about 4 years. So when and for every child, you sort of age an additional 4 years in your lack of interest in new things. I guess maybe you're.
Well, see, I'm an only child and I have no children. So,
you get to keep on keeping on, Bob.
For me, it was an actual cultural experience, meeting, interviewing, and sitting at a concert by Muddy Waters. And after that, in 1973 in Decorah, if it wasn't the blues, I didn't care.
Really?
I didn't care. I still presented music on public radio and was forced by my job to continue to learn and present things. But after that experience with Muddy and maybe Springsteen also in 76, if it wasn't that, I didn't care.
Interesting. So that was sort of your moment, right?
So the shows that I do on IPR, one is defined by at least 25 years old or the blues. And I find it interesting that some of the things that are defined by the blues, or even the Blues Foundation as the blues, I listen to it and I go, that ain't the blues. That's a rock band, you know? So what a strange kind of... Thank you for inviting me to be part of this.
I'm
beginning
this
to figure out how schizoid I really am.
Well, we're going to have to take a short break here just in a moment. But Mark, you also had to pick a song for us. Tell us about the song you picked
well,
and
my
why.
My song is from when I was, 13, I believe 13 when this one came out. Elton John had a big impact on me. He was huge, of course, after I discovered him. But at that point, he was early on in his career, and this song just really struck me. It's Leave On.
All right.
On a Christmas day when the New York Times said God is dead and the war's begun. I've been tossing a hell of a song today. And he shall be leave on. And he shall be a good man. Shall be leave on and touch us.
Mark Simmet's pick there. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about how our musical tastes evolved and what they say about us today on Talk of Iowa with IPR's Mark Simmet and Bob Doerr and psychologist Zlatan Krijan. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This morning, we are talking about musical interests, how they develop, how they evolve over time. And we want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me today, I've got Bob Doerr. He hosts Backtracks and Blue Avenue on Iowa Public Radio. He's the leader of the Blue Band. Mark Simmet is here, senior music producer at Iowa Public Radio. Zlatan Krijan is also here, associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University and a musician himself. And also joining the conversation now, Bob Harrington, who is a record store owner. He's the owner of Ragged Records in Davenport. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and earlier we were talking about how we buy music has evolved over time, you know, back with the singles being on 45s, the albums being on vinyl, and then we went to cassette tapes or 8 tracks and then cassette tapes, and then, of course, CDs, and now so much of it is done digitally. We've seen a lot of record shops closing over the recent years, but you feel like there's a little bit of a record store revival going on right now. Why do you think that is?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've actually got to see kind of all of this evolve. I've worked in the music industry on a retail level for over 30 years, so I got to see vinyl kind of go by the wayside, and you know, in the labels in the industry tell people that digital was the way to listen to music and CDs kind of take over. I think people kind of got bored with that, and they kind of got bored with, you know, just streaming music. And I think they, you know, like holding something in their hand and having liner notes to read. And so that's kind of brought vinyl back.
And are you seeing more people just walking in looking for new music now?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of slow for a while with new music. I kind of, I had new music stores for a long time and got out of it a little bit and got back into it 7-8 years ago. And it was a little slow for a while, but now I'm seeing, you know, many more young people coming in looking to buy music on vinyl, which is kind of interesting.
And do you have listening stations set up? I mean, I think we all remember exploring new music that way, where you'd go to the record store and actually listen.
Well, we don't really have listening stations, but we're glad to play music, you know, for anybody, anything they'd like to hear. And actually, being able to utilize digital as well as selling vinyl, you know, we're able to stream music and, you know, play anything for anybody because of things like Spotify.
Okay, so there's a nice combination there. Because, I mean, it's interesting that this research that we were talking about is all culled from how we're using these online musical sources like Spotify, which really, when Spotify came about, everybody was so excited about it because it was an opportunity to find new music, have so much access to new music. But it turns out a lot of us are just using it to listen to the same stuff that we listen to anyway.
Probably. I mean, I think it's important, no matter how you listen to music, it's great. You know, whether you're streaming it or buying a CD or buying vinyl, I think that's fantastic. I think from a listening standpoint, as far as a medium, a way to listen to music, I think vinyl is the most true way to listen to music. You know, I think it's the way that music was intended to be heard by the artist and the producer, as opposed to digital, which is compressed and, you know, is kind of artificially made louder. And so I think vinyl is definitely a better way to listen to music.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation today. And RL is on the line in North Liberty. Hi, RL.
Hello, friends. What a great show today.
Oh, thanks. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, it's just kind of interesting. My kids want for nothing when it comes to music. When I was a kid, and there was a song that was on that I really wanted to have, you know, I would, you know, find a top 40 radio station and have a cassette recorder there and wait for my song to come up. And I'd hit record, you know, and obviously I'd miss the first 5 seconds of it and then the last 10 seconds, so it would be a commercial or something. My kids now, if there's a song, you know, they'll find it on Spotify or Pandora or whatever, and they'll build playlists. They have access to it, you know, as much as they want. But the one thing that is interesting as a parent that is very different is sometimes they have difficulty delineating what's new and old. Like I have a playlist called Beatco, which is Beatles and Wilco, you know, a Beatles song and then a Wilco song that complements it. And when a new Wilco album comes out or something like that comes out, they have kind of trouble figuring out, you know, what's old and what's new.
Interesting. So. That's that's very interesting. And do you find yourself listening to new stuff because of what they're listening to?
I mean, that is definitely part of it. That, you know, that's the other thing I've recognized about this. You know, you're going to have your uptown funks and you're going to have your all about the basses, which everybody knows about. But kids, or at least my experience in our house, is my kids, if they find an artist they like, even if they're not popular, you know, on the radio or anything like that, if they like the music, they're going to listen to it. You know, and that person might emerge. That's kind of how I find new music, because I'll walk by their bedroom and I'll say, what's, you know, who are you listening to? And it's just because somebody has, you know, space on SoundCloud or something like that, and they're just a local artist in Peoria, and they've got a good sound, and they're making a little bit of money here and there. And if you're a good musician, you're a good artist, you're a good artist. So that, it does keep me a little bit fresh on what's going on out there.
Well, RL, thank you so much for calling.
Yep, bye.
You can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. And it's interesting that, you know, RL was talking about how our kids shape our interest in music. Of course, parents shape their kids' interest in music, at least for a while. I listen to a lot of music that my dad loves, that my mom loves. And we went through a period when my kids were little, and I listened to a lot of big band old stuff, too. And my kids would ask me every time I'd introduce them to a new artist, they would ask me, dead or not dead? and their song by the Beatles came on one day, and I said, well, this one's the Beatles. And my son, who was 4 at the time, said, yes, 2 dead, 2 are not. Like, well, it's not a pop quiz, kids. Wow. Just enjoy the music.
This reminds me of a thought I had a little while ago, which is about, you know, how we grow musically, how our taste changes. And I came to the conviction that the major way to grow musically is, or perhaps the only way, is to listen to music you don't like. So what I mean by that is of course, we like what we like. You know, people like, I like good music, which really doesn't mean anything. It just means that you like what you like. Because, of course, if you didn't like it, you wouldn't consider good music. So it's kind of a theological statement, right? But we can all look back 10 years in the past and see ourselves then not liking some music or even hating some music back then that we really like now. And we can probably trace that evolution of when we first heard it and we thought, it was kind of whatever. And then we heard a little more and then we found maybe one element that we could kind of grasp on that connected it to other music we liked already. And then over time, more elements. And then all of a sudden, there's this whole genre of new music that we like that we haven't liked before. But it always starts, very often starts with something we didn't like that much, or at least neutral towards.
All right. And
how much of it is a cultural statement, though? Your parents liked it, so you don't. Mm. Or your parents hated it, so you do. I mean, you like it because it is a rebellious statement, not necessarily because the music moves you, but because it is a cultural statement.
Right.
It is a rebellious kind of thing. And I don't know the answer to that, but it that's a question that I think always comes up. And I've seen it always come. I mean, I've hosted music shows, new music shows, since 1972. So I've seen these cultural waves coming back and forth, and a lot of times I think it is just anti. The world likes it, so I don't.
Sure.
Or I'm going to find something that everybody hates. So how much of it really is
Well, and that goes back to what we were talking
about. Cultural rebellion right. compared to what you really like.
And we were talking about that earlier. We're talking about what does the music say about you when you were a teenager? Because I wasn't going to listen to New Kids on the Block, and I wasn't going to listen to Whitney Houston.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what everybody else was listening to, and I didn't want to be like everybody else.
Right. So. And that has little to do with the keys Whitney Houston used in her music, right?
Right.
It had to do with the timbre. Often, you know, the noise level, how rough the sounds are. So when you think about music, there are a lot of these aspects of music that are some are related to musicality, like timbre or texture of color of sound, if you wish. But it's also associated with many other things. Is it associated with peace or aggression, with being nice or being mean, with relaxation or with energy? And then as well, all those social groups. And those things condition our responses to music so much on the top of actual musical content, per se.
It's very interesting. Bob?
Don't you think that social groups is a big part of that? And maybe the magic age of 14, whether it's 14 or 13 or 15. But at that point in your life, you're trying to find your own identity.
That's right.
And prior to that, you're more influenced by siblings, older siblings, or your parents and the music that they're listening to. But at that age is when you start to look and find your own identity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's go to the phones. Josh is on the line in Belmont. Hi, Josh.
I was just calling, kind of almost touching on what you all were just talking about now. In the past, I was really big into, like, probably up until my 20s, I was big into a lot of hard rock and heavy metal and punk. And then I kind of discovered playing mandolin, and I got really almost went in the opposite direction, getting into a lot of traditional country and bluegrass, almost to the point where I started my own band in Waterloo for a couple of years, and then moved down to southern Missouri just so I could be closer to the music. I'm back in Iowa now, and I still play, but it's just kind of, I'm in my 30s now, in that magical age of 33, but I still would choose bluegrass and Bill Monroe every day over Black Sabbath and Metallica.
Do you do Black Sabbath in a bluegrass kind of form?
No, I really don't.
There's your niche right there.
Yeah, I get kind of bored with those like kitschy kind of bluegrass covers of pop music. Right. Even
so, what age were you, Josh, when it all flipped?
I was probably 26, 27, somewhere in there. And when I was in college, I worked for the Iowa State Daily. And I actually had an opportunity to interview Chris Thiele when he was with Nickel Creek, and met them and did all that. But I was more interested that the Voodoo Glow Skulls were going to come to the maintenance shop the next week than I was that Nickel Creek was there. And, I got to see them play live, and I appreciated the talent. Now I'm kind of kicking myself for not taking more interest in them when I actually got to meet them before they were big famous stars.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for your call. And we've got a lot of other people on the line who want to share their thoughts today. Nan is up next in Ames. Hi, Nan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm baking cookies as I'm listening to your show, and you've made me smile multiple times. I have to say, growing up in the 60s, listening to KBUR while I did the dishes, so it was just one of those typical, Iowa radio stations that played a little bit of everything.
And so do you listen to that music to take you back there emotionally, or do you look for new stuff?
Well, oh my gosh, we've really evolved since then. I mean, my husband's played in a couple bands. My daughters are very talented young ladies. And my oldest daughter's 33, and I wanted to call her and say, what are you listening to today? But we've always exposed them to just tons of different types of music and artists and whatever. The Ames Library is amazing for checking out new music and listening to new stuff that, if you play a couple songs and you like it, great. If you find, every once in a while, you find a stinker too. But you get to have all these different artists, at your fingertips at the Ames Public Library. But when I think back to singing along with, like, Loretta Lynn or something while I'm doing the dishes, she's a pretty amazing person, and I didn't appreciate it at the time. Fortunately, my dad did set up the radio. I grew up in a really huge house, so he set up speakers throughout the house so you could dial the radio and then listen to it in multiple rooms. And
nice.
Yeah, anyway, and I love the vinyls. I love the crackly sound of vinyls and just all this stuff. I just wanted to give you guys a pat on the back because you're making me smile today.
Nan, thank you so much for your call. Thanks a lot. And we have time for one last call. Tim is on the line in Orient, Illinois. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Kudos to the show you put on, Bob.
Thank you.
Working today, but I just wanted to throw this out there. I'm kind of around these loud trucks and stuff like that and been listening a little bit to the conversation, but I'd say big influence on changing me into classical and making me listen to classical was seeing the movie, Malcolm McDowell. What was that? With
A Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange got me listening to classical music. I actually started to listen to public radio, and then as my girls were getting older, kind of they had an influence on me. Like the youngest one listened to ICP that I hated, but Marilyn Manson that I got to like it, Marilyn Manson, and then Smashing Pumpkins. And now as those girls are getting 30 and 33, I'm influencing them more by what I'm hearing, you know, whenever I put in the Killers or the Black Keys on, you know, my Pandora. Then I'm hearing these other bands or like listening to you guys way late at night, public TV. I heard the Tarlington Sisters or Tarkington Sisters. And I'm trying to think of some of these other ones, folk music that I picked up on public radio.
So, Tim, you're still out there searching, huh?
Oh, all the time. That's what I'm saying. Whenever I'm 58 and some of my buddies or, you know, peers say, oh, there hasn't been any music since the 80s, I'm going, well, you obviously are not listening to the right stations because, like, 91.1 I listen to a lot, especially after 7 o'clock.
Well, Tim, we are out of time, but thank you so much for calling. Thanks a lot. And we are going to go out with Emily asked me to pick a song, too, so we've got Love Cats from The Cure to go out with. I mentioned I was an aspirational listener, so I was only in third grade when this came out, but I was reaching upward. All right, Bob Doerr, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for the invitation.
Bob Doerr, of course, he's the host of Backtracks and Blue Avenue on Iowa Public Radio and the leader of the Blue Band. Mark Simmet, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity. It was fun.
Mark Simmet is senior music producer at Iowa Public Radio. Also, Zlatan Krijan, thank you.
Thank you all.
Zlatan Krijan, associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University and a musician himself. And Bob Harrington, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bob Harrington, owner of Ragged Records in Davenport. Charity Nebbe, this is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.